The red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
A lectern stands in an empty room. In a graveyard, a tombstone reads, Ali. Text, Ilyasa al-Shabazz.
No matter which way you turn, there is destiny. It was destiny that my father and Cassius Clay would meet. 3 short years that they would spend in their lives that destiny created for them. That was their blood brotherhood.
We are no longer slaves. White people no longer own us.
Cassius destroyed that image the other night when he knocked out Sonny Liston.
Malcolm came to this young man and he gave him the power that he needed to speak.
Words appear over a photo of men in military-style uniforms. A Netflix original documentary, a Lightbox production. On a stage, Malcolm X stands at a lectern. A film by Marcus A. Clark. Music by Thomas Brennick. Performed by Menahan Street Band. In a boxing ring, Muhammad Ali stands in a corner. Director of photography, Justin Janowitz. Co-producers, Vanessa Tovell, Carolyn Sperry Lewis. Cracked glass obscures a photo of Malcolm with his hand on the back of his neck. He wears a ring with an Islamic crescent moon and star symbol on one of his fingers. Executive producers, Jonathan Chin, Simon George, Aaron Sampson, Marcus A. Clark. Producers, Kenya Barris, Jason Perez. A red cloth with the Islamic symbol partially covers an American flag. Edited by Jeremy Seifer, Paul Carruthers. The Islamic symbol sits between 2 pictures of Malcolm and Elijah Muhammad. A photo of Ali divides them. Directed by Marcus A. Clark. A title appears over an image of Malcolm and Ali facing away from each other. Blood Brothers. A black and white photo appears of Malcolm grinning. He holds a camera in one hand. Muhammad Ali stands nearby and gazes at him. More photos of the two men appear.
Malcolm and Muhammad. They're very close. As brothers. I was there to witness it.
Text. Rahman Ali, Muhammad Ali's younger brother.
Did your brother like being around Malcolm?
Love, brother. I did too. He had an air about him. It was just divine. The electricity that came from his body was sacred.
Subtitles, Rahman. Only a few people like that in the world.
Why do you think they stopped being friends?
Well,
footage of Ali plays.
Destiny can take your best friend as an instrument to cause you harm and your worst enemy to do you good. Right? Judas betrayed Jesus. Malcolm X betrayed Elijah Muhammad. Destiny can take your best friend as an instrument to do you harm and your worst enemy to do you good.
Vintage footage plays of cars driving down a New York City street. Malcolm stands at a lectern.
It's time for you and me to stand up for ourselves. It is time for you and me to see for ourselves. And it is time for you and me to fight for ourselves.
A subway speeds down a raised track.
Are you unloved? That's what it is to be black in a white supremacist world.
Dr. Cornel West, political activist, professor at Harvard University.
You are unloved, uncared for, untended to, and viewed less beautiful, less moral, less intelligent. And you are told to always be scared. Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, no way.
He smiles and shakes his head.
Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali were the 2 most freest of black men in the 20th century. On the other hand, you know, there's a cross to bear. It's a tremendous cost of being a free and loving person.
Dr. West rubs his chin. Trees stand tall in a forest. On the leaf-covered ground, a worn sign reads, Welcome to Muhammad Ali Training Camp. Inside a building, a boxing ring sits in the center of a wide room. Dr. Todd Boyd, professor of cinema and media studies at USC.
It was unusual for a black person to think of themselves as, quote, pretty. Tampa the Whale should be pretty like me. I'm the king of the rain.
Athletes were expected to be humble. And then you had the Louisville lip.
Tenacity and dignity and like pride and so what, you don't like me, so what?
What do I act like I'm to you? Do I act like I'm a
I don't know, Cassius. You're just the, like you say, you're the greatest.
And a lot of people, even a lot of black people, weren't comfortable with this. They called him a loudmouth.
I don't have to be what you want me to be.
It was a moment of transition. And Ali really is at the forefront of this transition, as is Malcolm.
I'm free to be what I want to be and think what I want to think.
Right? They're changing the way the world saw the black man.
Malcolm stands in front of an enormous crowd.
How could so few white people rule so many black people?
Reverend Al Sharpton.
Martin Luther King, whose school of thought I come out of, spoke to who we must become. Malcolm spoke to who we were and who put us there.
A white man, Mike Wallace.
These homegrown Negro American Muslims are the most powerful of the black supremacist groups.
Mike Wallace had, of course, done this television program about the nation called The Hate That Hate Produced.
Four or five times a year, the Muslims assemble in one of America's major cities to hear their leader, Elijah Muhammad, founder and spiritual leader of the group.
The Christian religion has failed.
Elijah Muhammad, leader of the Nation of Islam, 1934 to 1975. Mike Wallace.
But of even more interest to New Yorkers is Malcolm X, the Muslims' New York minister.
The black man by nature is divine.
Now, does this mean that the white man by nature is evil?
By nature, he is other than divine.
This critique of whiteness was very powerful because prior to this time, you had to say something like that in private. You certainly couldn't call white people devils, not out loud.
By nature, he is evil.
He is a remarkable man, a man who, by his own admission, was once a procurer and dope peddler. But now he's a changed man. He will not smoke or drink. His life changed for him when the Muslim faith taught him no longer to be ashamed of being a black man.
You know, you have what you call a reference point. Malcolm's father was a solid reference, of course, his mother too. Earl, his father, and Louise, his mother, were followers of the Marcus Garvey movement.
Dr. Julius W. Garvey, son of Marcus Garvey.
My father's organization sought to link Africans in Africa, in the Caribbean, in the United States. My father felt that instead of Africans being servile, they must become self-reliant.
There is no Malcolm X without Garvey. Garvey used to say, the Negro is not afraid.
A photo of Earl Little, Malcolm X's father.
It's no more significant influence you can have for a young black boy is to be in the company of a father who was so well-versed and had an audience in his hand, you know, as both a minister, a preacher, and a representative of the whole Garvey movement.
Malcolm's father was Malcolm's hero. But the problem was, there were white supremacists who wanted to silence Earl Little.
Malcolm's just 6 years of age when his father is killed in 1931.
It was horrific what they did to him. He was knocked over the head, dragged to the trolley track so that the oncoming train would roll over him.
A train travels down tracks. Herb Boyd.
For the first 5 or 6 years of his life, he had a kind of a firsthand opportunity to capture the majesty of his father's voice. Over the years, he would certainly return to those moments of the whole Garvey movement.
Dr. Julius W. Garvey.
Out of the organization came people like Elijah Muhammad, who went on to form the Nation of Islam. Elijah Muhammad took what he had learned, the concept of having an economic base, the discipline and the militaristic attire, and put it in the religious setting of the black Muslims.
A woman in a white dress walks across a street, Harlem, New York City.
Long before the age of 21, Malcolm X ran away from school and went to Harlem.
1948.
And there, he ran numbers, sold bootleg whiskey, procured business for prostitutes, used and pushed dough. In the late 40s, Malcolm X pulled a robbery in Boston, was caught and sent to prison.
He served time for robbery in the Michigan and Massachusetts state penitentiary.
Early on, he had a kind of inquisitiveness. You know, like most restless folk, you could end up expressing it in a gangster-like way. You're in trying to conquer, be in control.
Inside the prison walls, he's like a caged tiger, absorbing information, cultivating his intelligence, reading. That's his indoctrination. That's the beginning. So once he's out, in 1952, he goes back to Michigan, and he really involves himself in the nation.
I'm real happy and thankful to Allah for the energy and for the spirit that he has put in Minister Malcolm.
A crowd of black women in white dresses and headscarves applaud.
And so much so, by 1954, he's a national spokesperson.
Malcolm speaks to Elijah Muhammad. Outside, Rahman Ali climbs a set of stairs using a walker. He approaches a gravestone.
My name is Rahman Ali. I'm proud and happy to say I'm the only brother of Muhammad Ali. He's going to paradise. The next time I see my brother be in heaven, I will be in heaven together. As small children growing up, he always told me, I'm going to be the most famous man in the whole world. As a small child, he was 10, 11, 12, 13, 16, 17. He did exactly what he said he would do.
Louisville, Kentucky, Muhammad Ali's childhood home. Bob Coleman, Muhammad Ali's childhood friend.
Yeah, the pink house right there is Muhammad Ali. Cassius Clay, but we called him Gigi. We all went to the same elementary school, junior high school, and senior high school. Central High School is the only black school in the city of Louisville. But we didn't have none of the major amenities that white schools had. They didn't put a track and football field at Central High School until they integrated school.
Gene Kilroy.
Cassius Clay Sr. was Southern Baptist. Cassius Clay Jr. was Southern Baptist, and they went to the church. He told me one time he went down to Louisville, he went outside a little church. They were singing the same hymns that they were singing in his church. What a friend we have in Jesus. And out comes the minister, say, hey, boy, get out of here. He said, something's wrong.
Footage of white people in a church.
They're singing the same hymns we are. Now, why do I have to leave? Because I'm black.
A bus drives down a wet city street.
Segregation was outrageous. You went to the bus station, they said colored section. You knew in the department stores you couldn't try on clothes. They'll take your money, but you got to buy that suit and hope it fits. You ain't going to put it on.
A set of low stone steps connect to a walkway that leads to Ali's house.
Cassius Clay was born in 1942.
Mississippi, 1955.
Emmett Till was born in 1941.
Money, Mississippi, a story that shocked the entire United States.
Cassius Clay, 13 years old.
The Emmett Till story was a searing event to the man who's going to become Muhammad Ali.
Emmett Till, 14, was kidnapped and killed allegedly for wolf whistling at the wife of accused Roy Bryant. Bryant and his half-brother, J.W. Milam, were acquitted by this jury.
A line of people walk past Emmett Till's open casket. Photos hang from the lid's inner lining.
He looked at Emmett Till's mutilated face in the pages of Jet magazine. He's heard the horrific stories from his father about the lynchings that continue to happen.
Johnny Smith.
My father was always very sensitive to oppression. And his father taught him, like any other black man will do today, how to survive. And my grandmother would say, this really bothered your father. He wanted to be great. But this is darkness for a child.
A train moves down a set of tracks. Harlem, New York City, 1960. A poster outside a restaurant advertises an event with Elijah Muhammad. A man in a military-style uniform sits on a leather couch. Letters on his hat read, FOI, Melchizedek Supreme Shabazz Allah.
I met Malcolm in Temple Number 7 restaurant. When Malcolm came in, played a giant. Malcolm, a giant. He shook his hand. The power of his hand, it felt like God.
Herb Boyd.
I first met Malcolm in person in about 1959, 1960. He walked down the hallway and shake everybody's hand. My cousin would say, go ahead and ask him a question if you get a chance. And say, no. I was so terrified.
On Sunday, in Temple Number 7, Malcolm taught 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 hours, nonstop.
The man that kidnapped us and brought us here, who made a slave out of us, who hung us on trees. I don't have to tell you which man.
A. Peter Bailey.
I had never heard anyone talk about attacks on the mind with the clarity that he did. Movies, the school textbooks, the television programs, all of this was a constant psychological attacks.
He even calls us boy. Don't care how big you get, he calls you boy.
Malcolm made you believe you couldn't die. And when you're a young man and you get a teaching like that, that's what you need.
Rome, 1960. A man runs with a torch.
Rome welcomes the summer games of the 17th Olympiad.
A large flock of birds flies across the sky.
In 1960, Cassius Clay is 18 years old. He's young, he's wide-eyed, goes to the Rome Olympics.
Cassius Clay, the winner for the USA.
And even then, he had that jaw-dropping charisma. He becomes virtually the mayor of the Olympic Village.
Jerry Eisenberg, Hall of Fame sports journalist.
First time I really saw him up close, he was sitting on the steps in the Olympic Village. And he's raving. You know, he's got the medal and he's holding it up. You look at me, look who I am, look how pretty I am. I'm gonna be the heavyweight champion of the world. They don't understand a freaking word he's saying, but I noticed something. Every time the athlete was a woman, they stopped and turned and looked back at him. I said, this guy's gonna have something. I don't know what, but it's gonna be something.
Tell me how you came to get such a Roman name as that.
Well, as I understand, I'm Cassius Marcellus Clay the Sixth, and my great-great-grandfather was a Kentucky slave, and he was named after some great Kentuckian. Where he was from or where it was all originated, I couldn't tell you, but since I've reached a little fame in boxing, most people want to know where I'm from and where did I get that name, but really, I haven't really checked on it.
Near a boxing ring, Ali jabs into the air beside another boxer. He punches a heavy bag.
He could not be more proud to represent America. This was his greatest honor.
Cars drive past the Coliseum.
And one of the things that he recognizes there is that there's no Jim Crow signs.
A photo of a white woman putting shoes on Ali appears.
He enjoys a freedom of movement he's never experienced before. This is not like Louisville, Kentucky.
A marquee outside of a theater reads, Messenger Elijah Muhammad.
I represent to you, not a prophet. Yes, sir. But I represent to you God in person.
Yes, sir! Yes, sir!
Various rings cover Melchizedek's fingers. He buttons his coat and straightens his bow tie.
In the most holy name of Almighty God, Allah, the true and living God, the only God, we forever thank him for his divine messenger and only messenger, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Why do you have any faith in white people? Tell me that.
The messenger's program is a discipline that we all need and never had. No alcohol, no drugs, no tobacco, no pork. Neat, clean, organized. I'm Melchizedek, Supreme Shabazz Allah, known as the Universal High Priest of the Nation of Islam on Earth and in the universe. I'm 84 years old. Very peaceful man. You understand what I'm trying to say? But it's nothing when you take the lights out. because you're trained that way. Very peaceful, very respectful, never the aggressor, but deadly. The brother who you think is humble, meek, and insecure, that brother is cold as ice when it comes to the teachings.
Malcolm stands at a lectern.
You say we hate white people? We don't hate anybody. We love our own people so much, they think we hate the ones who are inflicting injustice against them.
Louisville, Kentucky, 1960.
This is WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky. And our guest tonight, Louisville's Cassius Clay, the fourth-ranked world heavyweight. Hello.
Do you think that you are as good a boxer as Joe Louis was?
I'm not as good, but better. I'm more classier, I'm faster, and I talk more.
Who wins a gold medal at the Rome Olympics? He's a hero. But when he gets back to Louisville, he finds Louisville's the same.
I just got in from Rome, and I want to turn professional.
The standard understanding is that black athletes will be deferential on civil rights. They will be seen and not heard.
Ali smiles and steps up to a microphone. A crowd of people wave in an audience.
We people who are darker than blue. Are we gonna stand around this town and let what others say come true?
He wins the Olympics, and he's also overseas where things aren't segregated. Comes back home thinking being the champion would change things, but it didn't.
A bridge stands against a clouded sky. Johnny Smith.
Cassius Clay goes into a diner. A white man at the counter says, "We don't serve your kind, boy." And there he is with his Olympic jacket and his gold medal. He's humiliated. In that moment, he rejects America. He rips the medal off, tosses it into the river.
A haze obscures the tops of buildings near the bridge. A large boat travels slowly on the water below.
That disappointment, thinking, okay, I've done this for America, I'm the champ, I'm everything, but I'm still in a segregated world. And I think that got him. That woke us all up, tell the truth.
Footage of an older white man with glasses plays.
I'm Gordon B. Davidson, attorney for the Louisville Sponsoring Group, owner of Cassius Clay, and the hired hand to keep the group and Cassius Clay together.
He's now of interest to certain white residents of Louisville who view him as a commodity, okay, something that can be marketed.
I'm W.L. Lyons Brown, chairman of the board of Brown Foreman Distillers Corporation.
A group of very wealthy businessmen formed the Louisville Sponsoring Group to manage his boxing career.
J.D. Stetson Coleman.
Worth Bingham, assistant publisher.
And he's controlled by these 11 rich Louisville guys.
I'm one of the founders of the group, Cassius Clay.
And talking to them, you would kind of have a sense that they were talking about one of their racehorses. He was a really good boy.
Sunlight shines between the branches of a tree. A sleek white car drives down a highway. 1961, Miami, Florida.
Cassius goes to Miami to train under Angelo Dundee, one of the best trainers in the business.
A photo appears of Ali in a boxing ring. Ali sweats and punches a heavy bag.
And then he met a man by the name of Abdul Rahman, Captain Sam.
Wali Rahman Akil.
My father was the captain of the Miami Mosque. This was the area of the mosque at that particular time. He's out pushing the Muhammad Speaks newspaper. He hears a guy from across the street yell out, "Why are we called Negroes? Why are we deaf, dumb, and blind? Why is everybody making progress and we're so far behind?" My dad said, "Hey, man, I see you hip to the teachings." "Yeah, man, I'm Cassius Clay." Right away, they had an automatic chemistry.
There's no sense for most of America that Cassius Clay has a secret, that he's leading a double life.
Years appear backwards from 1961 to 1959. Ali boxes a white man with short hair.
In 1959, Cassius Clay is in Chicago for an amateur boxing exhibition. He had some free time. He's out on the street, and he sees members of the Nation of Islam.
A newspaper headline reads, "The truth is the best weapon."
And one of them hands him a record. A White Man's Heaven
is a Black Man's Hell by Louis X, eventually known as Louis Farrakhan, at one time known as Calypso Gene the Charmer.
Before we came to America, we were living in the East. By the Nile River, we were living.
So Cassius takes this record back to Louisville with him, and he plays it over and over and over again.
So my friend, it's easy to tell. White man heaven, black man hell.
The year moves from 1959 to 1961. In a training area, Ali stands in front of a mirror and jumps rope.
When he was training at the Fifth Street Gym in Miami, I saw some changing faces in the camp. Sam Saxon, Captain Sam, is with him. And as far as Angelo Dundee knows, he's a boyhood pal who he lets hang around the gym.
I just got through with the Henry Cooper fight.
Every day they would get together. He would teach Cassius Clay about Islam and, you know, bring the teachers to him.
A headline reads, "The Negro Revolution."
The Nation of Islam began to provide Clay a whole language of black excellence and black supreme achievement.
Zaheer Ali.
Captain Sam starts to mentor Cassius Clay.
Yeah, it's what I'm teaching.
In the career of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
And these Negro leaders.
In the emerging supernova of Malcolm X. Cassius becomes closer to the Nation of Islam. He doesn't join the nation, but he's interested.
In a house, Rahman Ali sits on a couch.
Do you think your brother could have become the greatest without his faith?
No, sir. The faith of Islam gives us confidence. God, oh my God, is decent. God is powerful. God is righteous. Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X gave us confidence to be great.
1962, Randy Roberts.
In June, Cassius and his brother, they were in their home in Louisville. And they got a call from Captain Sam. The Nation of Islam was holding a big rally in Detroit.
Cassius and Rudy could not be more excited. They've never seen the messenger in person. Captain Sam drives from Miami to Louisville, picks up the Clay brothers, and they go to Detroit. But before they go into Olympia Stadium, Sam takes them into a diner. And in that diner is Malcolm X.
An animated drawing of Malcolm appears.
There's Malcolm X sitting at a table, like he would always sit at a table, facing the door, you know, almost like kind of an Old West cowboy movie.
Ali approaches the diner.
Around Malcolm's table are guards. Cassius is starstruck.
Malcolm wears a ring with the Islamic crescent and star.
Rarely is Cassius starstruck.
He acted as if I was supposed to know who he was. I had never even heard of him. Ours were two entirely different worlds. In fact, Elijah Muhammad instructed us Muslims against all forms of sports. That's funny. My father didn't know who he was, but he just went along with, you know, that sense of importance. If this man thinks he is famous, then I'm going to go along with him. Of course I know you're great.
A photo appears of Malcolm grinning.
Malcolm X was a genius. He spoke the truth about how black folks were mistreated in America. When they hate, it was truth.
In a stadium.
Rudy and Cassius, they go into Olympia Stadium. And what do they see?
A photo of men in FOI uniforms.
They see an army of black men, proud black men, dressed in black suits, bow ties. And there's a sense of order. There's a sense of discipline.
Before the white man, we had great civilization, just as powerful than what the white man has put on the earth.
And the message that Cassius hears that day is separation or death.
Separation or death. We don't want no integration. We want separation. We don't want nothing but their freedom does own some of this earth that we can call ours.
A photo appears of a black man in the audience.
This analysis of the white man being the devil was really attractive to people who had experienced hell at the hands of white people.
Then what good is Christianity to you and I if the religion will not defend us against nature? They said they are followers of Jesus. They're followers of the devil.
Elijah Muhammad looks down. He wears a hat with a sparkling crescent and star symbol on the front. Passages from the autobiography of Malcolm X appear over a town.
Now and then, I heard how Cassius showed up in Muslim mosques and restaurants in various cities. And if I happened to be speaking anywhere within reasonable distance of wherever Cassius was, he would be present.
At night, a car's headlights shine as it drives forward. A series of lights glow on the buildings behind it. 1963. A large crowd of people cross a city street. Johnny Smith.
In March of 1963, Cassius is in New York for the fight against Doug Jones.
A photo of Ali posing with a newspaper.
Who's there? Malcolm is taking a special interest in this young heavyweight.
Clay, winner by unanimous decision.
The next day, Cassius Clay seen out in public wearing the dark suit, the white shirt, the black bow tie. And he gives an interview to the New York Post. He was asked about why he didn't join civil rights marches. He says that I don't believe in nonviolence and that I believe in an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's very clear what happened. He's in Harlem. He was spending time with Malcolm.
Malcolm brought Muhammad Ali to the temple and introduced Muhammad Ali to us.
They had this kind of student-teacher relationship. The age difference, 22-year-old Adonis. And here's Malcolm coming in, a little bit older understanding of the world that's going to be important to Muhammad Ali.
You can't be around Malcolm and not learn. Malcolm shared the wisdom.
Footage plays of a white police officer grabbing at a black man. Another officer holds a dog's leash.
If the government can't defend us, what should we do? Go find out who bombed the church in Birmingham, Alabama.
A headline, church bombed, four children die.
If they can't find out, then let us go find out. And when we find... I don't want to hear that. And when we find out who it was who murdered our little female babies, then the law of justice is that a murderer should be murdered.
When Cassius Clay meets Malcolm X, he has no idea. Malcolm is moving in a new political direction. Malcolm believes that the Nation of Islam has the potential to make a much bigger difference if it joins the front lines.
Don't you be fooled by these Uncle Tom Negro preachers. When the dog attacks you, you get that dog, two-legged dog or four-legged dog.
He did not advocate violence. He advocated self-defense.
We're not trying to start anything. Don't start no shit, won't be done started. But if you come for us, be prepared to fight because we're not embracing this Martin Luther King philosophy.
But Elijah has told him to stand down.
A typed letter with an Islamic symbol.
In a number of Elijah's letters to Malcolm, he reminds him, do not say anything that you have not heard me say.
Elijah said, the judgment of white America will come at the hands of God. For Malcolm, this did not align with his desire to see justice more immediately.
As long as this so-called civil rights struggle is led, and when I say led, I use led in quotes, actually contained by Uncle Tom Negro leaders, then the white power structure isn't worried at all. They're only worried when they know that the masses of black people are ready to explode, and in exploding, it will destroy some of the furniture in their house.
My father loved his fearlessness, and he did pattern a lot of his presentation based on how Malcolm presented himself.
A photo of Malcolm pointing.
You start to see some of the early developing tension between the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X?
Elijah Muhammad was not charismatic in the way that Malcolm was charismatic.
Because you don't like the idea of white people shooting black people down, do you? And you're ready to do something about it, aren't you? We know you are.
The rank and file of the Nation of Islam loved Malcolm. For many people, he was their most direct experience and encounter with the teachings of Elijah Muhammad.
Once Malcolm began to pursue things like an intellectual, I think he reached a point where his interest and the interest of the nation diverged. And of course, this leads to more tension, more conflict.
Passages from the autobiography of Malcolm X appear.
I liked him. Some contagious quality about him made him one of the very few people I ever invited to my home.
Malcolm X's house, Queens, New York.
They would talk. They probably talked on the phone, but it's all secretive. But the Louisville sponsoring group was starting to pick up what was going on.
They began to realize that Cassius was affiliated with the Muslims, that they began to step back.
And suddenly, in Cassius Clay's rhetoric, we start to hear the echo of Malcolm X.
Cars travel down a city street.
July 1963, Chicago. Bruce Hills, a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, is camped outside of the University of Islam, which is the Nation of Islam's school. Somehow, he learns that there's a tomato red Cadillac parked behind the University of Islam.
Cassius and Rudy and a few others come out.
Bruce Hills gets excited. His eyes light up. And he starts following Cassius's car. Bruce gets Cassius to roll down the window.
He sees Cassius has a Star and Crescent pin on. What's going on? Are you a member of the Nation of Islam?
And at first, Cassius Clay says, no. And then he says,
well, so what if I am? It's a great organization. And it continues until Rudy turns onto the freeway out of Chicago.
Cars move beneath the shadows of an overpass.
Now, the story published by Bruce Hills, it doesn't quite gain momentum yet in the press. But it's obvious that he has a relationship with the Nation of Islam.
The fact that Cassius Clay was somehow connected to this group made a lot of white people nervous.
And the FBI says the movement is a potential threat to the internal security of the United States.
Two black men shake hands.
J. Edgar Hoover was the director of the FBI, working for the Kennedy administration. Hoover and the FBI carried out a counterintelligence program designed to cut the legs out from Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X.
Various FBI reports appear.
Not just passive surveillance, but active infiltration designed to undermine the impact that the Nation of Islam was having, to neutralize the impact that Malcolm was having.
Every day now, they're planning how to stop Elijah and his followers. But I say, I think you're a little late.
Malcolm sits behind Elijah and applauds. A TV screen shows footage of Kennedy.
We are confronted primarily with a moral issue. It is as old as the scriptures and is as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities, whether we are going to treat our fellow Americans as we want to be treated.
The TV screen fills with static and Kennedy's image disappears, November 22, 1963.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Outside the White House, two lines of military personnel stand across from one another. They lower flags into the space between them. A band marches. A horse-drawn cart carries Kennedy's coffin.
Down this avenue of sadness, they bring President John F. Kennedy, martyred hero, to lie in state under the great dome of the Capitol.
When Kennedy died, Elijah Muhammad instructed all the temples to leave it to him to express the feelings of the nation about the death of the president.
Elijah Muhammad, from his home in Phoenix, telephoned the newspaper ordering that a statement be placed on page one. The statement reads, "We with the world are very shocked at the assassination of our president."
I have to respect what the messenger said. No statement should be made. I got that. But me, if you're teaching the white man the devil, who the hell is Kennedy? Father, I'm gonna say he ain't do a damn thing for me. I still got to provide for myself. He ain't put no money in my pocket. But I have to go with my father, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. He did make it plain, don't make no statements.
John Ali.
In spite of the messenger's instructions, Malcolm spoke.
John stares off.
Malcolm X, second in command of the Black Muslim movement, expressed joy at the assassination of President Kennedy at a Manhattan rally last Sunday. Malcolm said that the killing of the president was an instance of the chickens coming home to roost. He added, and we quote, "Being an old farm boy myself, chickens coming home to roost never make me sad, they always make me glad." In Chicago today, Elijah Muhammad, the leader of the anti-white Muslim movement, suspended Malcolm X and disavowed his statement.
It gave Elijah Muhammad a socially acceptable excuse for silencing Malcolm.
Black Muslim chief suspends Malcolm X for slur on Kennedy.
He's not allowed to preach. He's not allowed to appear at his mosque in Harlem. And in fact, the members of that mosque, they're not allowed to be associated with Malcolm either.
Peter Goldman, journalist, author of The Death and Life of Malcolm X.
This was a big breach in his life. He regarded Elijah Muhammad is his personal savior. His feelings were unquestionably deep, devout.
I want to apologize to you for having let you down, for the mistakes that I've made, especially during the past year. And above all else, I'm praying to Allah put mercy and forgiveness in your heart.
Malcolm claps.
He is torn here between this idea that Elijah Muhammad is like his father and the fact that his father got his hand around Malcolm's throat.
A photo of Elijah. He looks off to the side.
The growing rift was going to be a big problem for, among other people, Muhammad Ali.
People lounge on a sunny beach, 1964.
If Sonny lets him whoop me, I'll kiss his feet in the rain. Tell him he's the greatest.
You have in Listening Ali a thug on one side and a loudmouth on the other side.
You look at me, I'm loaded with confidence. I can't beat me. I done had 180 amateur fights, 22 professional fights, and I'm pretty as a girl.
People were scared to death of Liston. Sonny Liston was a boxer who came out of the penitentiary. Worked for organized crime as a leg breaker. You owe some money, you get a visit from Sonny.
He'll fall an eight to prove that I'm great. And if he keeps talking jive, I'm gonna cut it to five.
Cassius, because of what he was focused on, training for that major fight, I don't think he was attuned to all of the internal dynamics in the Nation of Islam.
At Malcolm's house.
On January 15th, 1964, Malcolm is gonna head south. He's going to Miami with his family to visit Cassius Clay. So in advance of the trip, he calls Cassius, and Cassius responds, great, he's enthusiastic, he's excited to see him. We know this call took place between Malcolm and Cassius because a New York FBI agent immediately called the field office in Miami and provided a directive. Malcolm is arriving on this specific flight. Cassius Clay is going to be there. Make sure you tail their car.
A breeze rustles through the fronds of a group of palm trees.
Miami was the only place where we had gone as a family together on a vacation and to be in someone else's home.
Cassius Clay's house, Miami, Florida. A photo appears.
That family photo of my mother and my two elder sisters, Attila and Kabila. And I'm sitting on Muhammad Ali's lap.
In the photo, Ali beams.
For my father to take his wife and his babies and go to his home It meant that my father trusted him 100%.
Hannah Ali.
My dad considered him to be a friend. He considered him to be family, really. And Malcolm was one of those few people that he met that he could trust.
Ali's house sits behind a black iron fence.
Malcolm was in need of allies. He had become isolated in the movement. Cassius could be the big fish. I think that is very possibly part of Malcolm's calculation.
You can't dismiss the possibility that he had those particular motives that it could be self-serving. Somebody can, you know, I can use and utilize because of his growing influentiality that he could help me too.
The family photo appears in a newspaper.
Malcolm sends these pictures to two black newspapers. Malcolm wants to remind Elijah Muhammad that Cassius Clay has the ability to bring more members into the movement, and they're his closest brothers.
Randy Roberts.
Malcolm says to Elijah Muhammad, what would it be like if for Savior's Day celebration, which was a day after the fight, if I show up with Cassius Clay?
Posters for Ali and Elijah.
I want to come back, honorable messenger, and I have someone who can help our cause.
A photo of Ali and Malcolm sitting together at a boxing ring.
About a week before the fight, Malcolm X shows up. Malcolm goes to a couple of workouts in camp.
He had been asked to leave and go home, that he could come back for the fight. The real emphasis at that point was whether or not Cassius Clay was a member of the Nation of Islam.
They didn't want some Muslim being the heavyweight champion, so they basically threatened him. Cassius was about to pack up the bus to leave town since they said they were canceling the fight. The promoters found out he was leaving. They came back and said, hey, you just don't tell nobody you're a Muslim, we won't say nothing.
A white plane rolls down a sunny tarmac. Words along the side read, Pan American.
February 25th, 1964. Heavyweight championship of the world. Malcolm has come back to Miami.
Miami, Florida, where the torch of friendship signifies a welcome to good people of all races and creeds.
Now remember, Miami is a segregated city, and he has to stay at a hotel that is only for black people.
From the moment you drive up to the main entrance of the Hampton House, your welcome is assured. A home away from home to thousands of visitors from states of the United States and many foreign lands who seek the fabulous Florida sunshine.
Footage shows a man diving into a pool. In the present, a sign reads, Historic Hampton House Cultural Center.
If you like to lose your money, then be a fool and bet on Sonny. But if you want to have a good day, then put it on Clay.
Sonny Liston holds up a peace sign.
I always thought Sonny Liston was really afraid of only one thing, and that was a crazy man.
Liston steps onto a scale.
He'd come out of the system and spent time in jail. He had seen people go nuts. Cassius used that, harassing him, making fun of him. At the weigh-in, he went nuts, tried to get at Sonny Liston. A crazy man who had nothing to lose could really hurt you.
Liston pulls on the belt of his robe.
We're almost all set to go for that World Heavyweight Championship fight. The puncher, champion Sonny Liston. The boxer, challenger Cassius Clay.
Just before the fight, Cassius is nervous. This is a big fight. He's going to fight Sonny Liston, who is a bad man. Suddenly, Malcolm X shows up in the locker room.
Made prayer and talked to my brother. Gave my brother some instructions. My brother came out. I was very confident.
Malcolm encouraged him to believe that he had to bring with him into that ring the power of God, if not God himself.
We're set for an exciting night here in Convention Hall, Miami Beach.
You know, with the support of your brother, who believes just as deeply as you do, you can pray to God to give you the will to do what you must.
Now the questions will be answered. If it goes past the first round, there will be surprises already.
Malcolm got a seat sitting in row 7, seat 7. This is prophecy coming to truth.
And here they come. Play just laughs at him, backs away, bobbing, breathing. Play a row left and a right of sail. The two couples, Liston bleeding under both eyes.
The bell sounds for the fifth round, and he is having trouble with his eyes.
One of his trainers yelled there's something in Liston's gloves. Play is blinking, said he can't see.
A photo of Liston punching Ali.
Here's Liston crouching, hitting to the body, and Play keeps blinking like he doesn't see Liston, and that will be fatal.
With his great body and head movement, kept him from Liston punches. Round 5 saw Cassius come back on the attack. All through this fight, Cassius has gripped that left hand into some Liston's face. And here in the 6th round, Play is taking control of the fight.
Lights flash over the ring as Liston and Ali fight.
This ends. Liston moves very wearily to his corner.
As we come up to round 7.
Wait a minute! Sonny Liston!
Every time I watch it, I still get goosebumps.
Pandemonium has broken loose.
When he goes around the ring and he points everybody out, I told you, I told you.
I told you I was the greatest. I proved it.
That moment, it'll stick with you the rest of your life.
I shook up the world.
A photo of Ali raising his arms.
He said he was the greatest. All of the odds were against him. He upset the odds makers. He won. He became victorious. He became the champ. And the people who understand psychology and the effect that the psychological effect that the image of one's hero has upon the person himself, they knew that as soon as if people began to identify with Cassius and the type of image he was creating, they were going to have trouble out of these Negroes, because they'd have Negroes walking around the street saying, I'm the greatest.
They leave the convention center, a small group of people, Rudy, Cassius, Malcolm X, Jim Brown, the great football player at the time, Sam Cooke, the unbelievable recording artist who was a good friend of Cassius, and they come here.
In a restaurant, a row of yellow stools sit in front of a counter.
To the Hampton House. Cassius and Rudy sit back here on these very stools.
A photo of Ali eating ice cream.
Cassius Clay, the champion, eating a bowl of ice cream. That was his idea of a big celebration, was a bowl of ice cream.
In the photo, Malcolm holds a camera and leans over Ali's shoulder.
One of the happiest times in my life. Everybody celebrated the victory.
Malcolm photographs Ali.
Now it's in this moment that they all say, well, we believed in you, but it was Malcolm who believed in him. And that means something. It's with gratitude that he celebrates with Malcolm.
Grainy footage of the lit Hampton House sign plays.
It's getting late. And the story goes that Malcolm, Cassius Clay, Rudy, Jim Brown, and maybe a few others.
They go to Malcolm X's room. It's time to talk serious now. Now Malcolm X is saying, you know, this Louisville lip, it's time to end that. You've got the title. You've got the pulpit. Now you gotta start talking right.
In a hotel room, a small TV fills with static. Hampton House, Muhammad Ali's room.
We weren't in the room. We don't have a recording of those conversations. All we know is what happens next.
He was able, yes, sir, by confessing Allah is God and Muhammad is his messenger, yes, that he whipped a much tougher man than he. Yes. The enemy wanted him to come out all blasted. Yes. They had said that he would Liston would tear up that pretty face of you. But Allah and myself said no, no.
And do you think that Cassius, as being a black Muslim, has had anything to do with this victory?
Well, I haven't heard him say he was a black Muslim. I have heard him say that he believes in the religion of Islam.
March 1964, the United Nations building.
About a week after the fight between Clay and Liston, they go to the United Nations.
Malcolm X, I want to talk with you briefly about your affiliation with Cassius. How long have you known him?
About 3 years.
And have you been advising him as far as his religious affiliations are concerned?
Well, no, I don't give advice to anyone. He's my brother and my friend. I express what I know and understand around him.
And Malcolm X introduces him to black diplomats from all over Africa. And this is where Malcolm reminds him, you are not what you were before. Now, you are someone who is looked up to all over the world.
Do you plan to visit Nigeria on your trip?
Sir. That's one of my main stops, Africa.
Malcolm wanted to play on a larger stage.
He was going to take the race situation and internationalize it. Take it to the UN. The United States was pushing itself as the leader of the free world, the supporter of human rights. And Brother Malcolm was out there saying, hey, y'all, this is simply not happening.
Ali walks with Malcolm.
Malcolm knew that this would be something that would compel the federal government to move.
Flags wave outside the UN.
Cassius is in a better position than anyone else to restore a sense of racial pride to not only our people in this country, but all over the world.
City lights shine at night. Photos appear of Malcolm and Ali together.
Over the course of the week, Malcolm and Cassius look like they've never been closer. They go to Times Square, and they go and they watch the fight of Clay defeating Liston.
In the boxing ring, Liston lowers his head.
And they come out of the theater. What do you see? A crowd, hundreds of people surrounding them.
In photos, Malcolm smiles while Ali signs autographs.
Reporters are asking Malcolm questions about whether or not the champ is going to be in his movement. There are all these questions about what's going to happen next.
Headline, will Link with Malcolm X hurt Cassius Clay's boxing career?
There's an FBI agent in Chicago who is requesting continued surveillance of Elijah Muhammad's mansion. And this agent learns that Elijah Muhammad has had phone conversations with the heavyweight champion.
A bird flies near a tall, many-storied building.
On March 6, 1964, Cassius returns to his room back at the Hotel Teresa. He gets a phone call, and it's Elijah Muhammad. And the Supreme Minister tells him, you are not allowed to associate with Malcolm anymore.
Wearing a suit and bow tie, Ali steps out of a building. He looks around and stretches his arms, then walks forward. Another man follows behind him. A white reporter holds up a microphone to Ali.
I understand that you're headed for Chicago later on this afternoon to meet with Elijah Muhammad.
Yes, sir. Having dinner with him.
Uh-huh. One of the main reasons for you joining the Black Muslims was your friendship with Malcolm X, wasn't it?
No, I was a Muslim 4 years before I met Malcolm X.
Oh, really? He's a friend of yours now, though, isn't he? Mm.
Yeah. He's a brother, man. He's my brother. Whatever you do, he's my brother.
Uh-huh. Now that he's split away from the Muslims...
I don't know about splitting. I'll have to see the high authority on that. That's one of my main reasons for going, is to find out the real story. I don't believe nothing the press and people write.
A trio of children walk down a sidewalk. Chicago. A sign outside a building reads, Muhammad's Temple Number 2.
Elijah Muhammad says...
Rahman, for all my followers and all my people that believe in Islam.
This is the brother, Cassius Clay, is the most trusting follower that I got. So I named him Muhammad Ali.
In a photo, Ali's shoulder brushes Elijah's.
That's how you get the name.
On a stage, Ali sits while Elijah stands at a podium.
Cassius Clay, he's given his Muslim name Muhammad Ali. Most people had to wait for years to get that. He became a hero. He appeared on the stage with the messenger. And Malcolm was out in the cold.
A newspaper reads, New York, Monday, March 9, 1964. Headline, Malcolm X bolts Muslims, Clay stays.
Muhammad Ali then is in the crosshairs between two very powerful individuals, two powerful black leaders, Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X. Whether he was aware of that or not,
when forced to choose. For Malcolm, he had no choice but to choose himself. For Cassius, he had to choose his spiritual father. Malcolm was an individual. Elijah was an institution.
Does this split disturb you that has been reported?
No, what Malcolm X does is his business. He's one man.
Your leader is Elijah Muhammad.
Yes, sir.
A poster for Elijah hangs on a wall.
The messenger was our father, a father we never had and always wanted. He was like the blood in our vein. It's no Melchizedek without the messenger's teachings. Take these teachings, I'm just another nigga in the street. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Mariam Ali.
It wasn't a simple storyline, and my father was right up in the middle of it as this young man trying to choose. And yeah, there could have been an element of survival.
Cassius Clay is a name no more, is that right?
Yes, sir. It's Muhammad Ali. Muhammad means worthy of all praises, and Ali means most high.
When Malcolm heard this, Malcolm exploded in a car and said, that's political.
Was anybody special gave you the name?
Yes, sir. My leading teacher, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad.
He knew that in the battle to win the heart of Muhammad Ali, he had lost the fight.
Muhammad, my name is Muhammad. Y'all keep calling me Cassius. I'm tired of telling you. You know, you're intelligent. My name is Muhammad Ali, not Cassius.
Ali would not let America define him, and he wouldn't even let them name him.
Muhammad Ali, more popularly known as Gaseous Cassius, has just hit town for his...
All of the endorsements, all of the commercials, Hollywood, all of that's open to you. And changing your name closes the door to all of that. It would take a lot of courage in the 21st century, but it was unthinkable. You would have to be out of your mind.
A cartoon of Muhammad Ali.
It was the ultimate statement.
Mr. Clay.
Muhammad Ali, sir.
Mr. Clay.
Muhammad Ali, sir.
Mr. Muhammad Ali, either one.
Just Muhammad Ali.
When you appear before...
And all of a sudden people said, who does he think is the loudmouth and... The loudmouth and who does he think he is? Gonna take a different name, different religion.
It's an insult to be called Cassius Clay, because I'm not white. I'm Muhammad Ali. I'm a black man. It's the name of our history, our ancestry. So now it's an honor, once coming into the knowledge of self, to be called by my own name. How would a Russian look named George Washington?
Outside, Ali waves as he walks down a set of stairs. He shakes hands.
You have Muslims around the world who maybe never followed a boxing match, now are hearing this name emanating over the press wires, Muhammad Ali, Muhammad Ali.
At night, Ali steps down a ramp. A crowd surrounds him. April 1964.
1964, Muhammad and Malcolm traveled to Africa and the Middle East, but not together. They both had this concern for the whole winds of change that are blowing across Africa. Muhammad Ali was met with all these adoring masses of people. But he was mesmerizing in so many different ways. The kind of charisma that he possessed, you know, it's extraordinary.
A plane moves down a tarmac. Malcolm steps off a plane ramp carrying luggage.
And Malcolm is traveling alone, meeting with these here world leaders. He was trying to bring the message of 22 million African Americans to the world stage.
Assalamu alaikum.
And bring charges, you know, against the U.S. in terms of their violation of human rights.
Our problem is not an American problem, it's a human problem. It's not a Negro problem, it's a problem of humanity.
He's like a representative, a congressman, a senator from Black America, if not the president of Black America.
The autobiography of Malcolm X.
The Muslim from America excited everywhere the most intense curiosity and interest. I was mistaken time and again for Cassius Clay.
A photo shows Malcolm standing beside Ali. They both wear black suits.
A local newspaper had printed a photograph of Cassius and me together at the United Nations.
Outside, a crowd of black people stand behind a fence and wave.
At that moment, he had captured the imagination and the support of the entire dark world.
Ali smiles. He wears a small scarf tied around his neck. In a town, a huge group of people surround him. A man holds up a sign that reads, "Welcome Cassius Clay, King of the World." A man stands on top of a car and takes a picture. Children run out of a school. Ali sits on top of a car with his legs through a sunroof. People follow.
Old pirates, yes, they rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my
father always spoke about the redemption of Africa. And redemption song was a homage, if you will, to Marcus Garvey, and a statement that Marcus Garvey made in 1937, that we must liberate our minds from mental slavery, because while others may help us to liberate our bodies, none but ourselves can liberate our minds.
Dr. Julius W. Garvey, a photo of Ali riding a horse appears on the cover of Ebony magazine. A newspaper shows a photo of Ali with the Ghanaian president, Kwame Nkrumah.
I think Malcolm started to see himself, I believe, taking on that mantle.
Various photos of Malcolm pass. He poses with his chin on his fist on the cover of Post magazine. He shows another man a page in the Quran. He talks to a black man with a mustache. Outside, he sits cross-legged on a rug with three other men.
Because of the spiritual rebirth which I was blessed to undergo as a result of the pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca, I no longer subscribe to sweeping indictments of any one race.
Text appears over footage of Malcolm. It reads, Malcolm X, former black Muslim. In Ghana, women walk down a street with baskets of goods balanced on top of their heads.
May 17th, 1964. Accra, Ghana. Outside the Ambassador Hotel.
Malcolm was with some of his American expat friends, Maya Angelou and others.
Malcolm is being taken to the airport and outside the hotel, and here comes Muhammad Ali.
A man holds up a Welcome to Ghana sign.
Now keep in mind that Malcolm, he's been to Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and in his journal, he writes about Ali as his brother and his friend. So in this moment in Accra, Ghana, when he surprisingly sees the champ, he thinks that they're going to embrace as brothers.
A cameraman films Ali walking.
Malcolm X keeps saying, Muhammad, Muhammad. Finally, Muhammad Ali turns to him and says, look, you turned your back on Elijah Muhammad. You know, you were wrong, brother. You were wrong. He turns around and walks away.
He kind of snubbed Malcolm at that point. Their relationship had pretty much soured, torn apart.
And Maya Angelou would later write about how when Malcolm gets in the car, he's slumped in the passenger seat. He says, I've lost so much.
Malcolm climbs into a car.
He's lost Elijah Muhammad, who had played a paternal role in his life. And now he's lost Muhammad Ali.
If that's the blood brotherhood we're talking about, I think it was probably the end of the blood brotherhood.
Headline, Clay makes Malcolm ex-friend.
What's your plan now?
I'm going back to the States first and see how my family is doing. You
yes.
Know. See what developed.
Ilyasa Al-Shabazz.
When he returned from Africa at JFK Airport, my mother handed me over to my father and he's smiling. I don't know if that's a fond memory or if it's because I've seen the photo so many times, but I feel like I see him looking at me like he's waiting for something to happen.
And this is a golden Muslim mosque that was presented to me by the Islamic Council of all Egypt.
June 1964. Another man helps Ali hold up a gold miniature model of a mosque.
All solid gold. Solid gold. This is a gift our leading teacher for waking all of us up, because we were in a bad state of condition before we heard him. Yes,
Ali gives Elijah the model. A black woman in a dress stands in front of a sign that reads, Sarah Slack.
Have you and Malcolm X, the man who helped convert you to the black Muslim movement, have the two of you split?
When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad cuts a man off, well then he's automatically cut off with all of his followers.
My newspaper carried a story saying upon your return from Africa, you refused to stay at the Teresa Hotel, your former
headquarters.
Well, that's
right. My leader told me, not my leader, but various officials said that it wouldn't be nice being in the same hotel that he was in, and whatever they say, go.
At an interview, Malcolm sits in front of a microphone.
When Cassius Clay was in Accra, he was quoted as saying some things that were not so friendly. Could you have anything to say about that?
I don't know anything about what he said. I'm always reluctant to believe
what I read in the newspaper that one black man supposedly said about another black man. Well, and if I have anything at all to say about Cassius, I'll say it to him.
I don't even talk about Malcolm X. He's not in our mind. We don't worry about Malcolm X. We have too much to do, and he's just one individual who, as we say, went astray.
Ali purses his lips.
Do you still consider him a friend?
Yes, I consider all of our people my friend. And usually those who act unfriendly are only reflecting the poison that someone else has put in them.
The interviewer, a white man, looks down.
I'm wondering if you still believe, as I think you certainly did at the time you were allied to the black Muslim movement, in a segregated black nation
No.
in North America.
I don't believe in any form of segregation or any form of racism.
Are you still a Muslim yourself?
Oh, yes. I'm a Muslim. I believe in the religion of Islam, which believes in brotherhood, complete brotherhood of all people.
Headline, Malcolm X calls Elijah a faker.
Malcolm felt that he was now a big man before the public, and this seemed to have been his desire. He wanted to be seen and heard. He wanted to exalt himself above his teacher.
A headline beside a picture of Malcolm reads, "I want to undo my wrongs."
Once Malcolm is labeled a hypocrite, it marks him. What people think hypocrite means or permits them to contemplate, to do, puts him in an extremely vulnerable position.
A newspaper reports on Ali.
We definitely look at that as one of the worst things you can do, just be a hypocrite. You know, we don't affiliate ourselves with hypocrites, and we let Allah take care of our hypocrites.
Why are they threatening your life?
Well, primarily because they're afraid that I will tell the real reason that they've been, that I'm out of the black Muslim movement, which I never told. I kept to myself. But the real reason is that Elijah Muhammad, the head of the movement, is the father of 8 children by 6 different teenage girls. Six different teenage girls who were his private personal secretaries.
Rahman shakes his head.
She talked about it like that. Elijah Muhammad? He told you everything you knew. Go turn against that man? What a fool.
Headline, Malcolm X, a man marked for death. A phrase reads, Malcolm and his followers are concerned over the threats.
That's a mistake he made. Your mission and your personal life is separate.
Melchizedek smiles.
If I got a package for you, and my mission is to come across the street and give you the package, that's my mission. If you see me across the street with a young girl or drinking a quart of wine, that ain't none of your business. Because I fulfill my mission. The messenger's job is not to discuss or explain his personal life. His job is to deliver the message. Who in the hell are you to question the messenger who took you out of a garbage can, cleaned you up, and put you in front of the world as the number one spokesman for black people? Now you're going to question him? No.
Old footage plays of Ali standing in a house with Rahman.
When Malcolm did that, talking about Elijah, different bad things about his lifestyle with women and things like that. Everybody loved Elijah, turned against him. You shouldn't have said that. Too many people love Elijah. They were killed for Elijah. They did.
February the 14th, 1965. Malcolm's house was firebombed in East Elmhurst.
His house in Queens was seriously damaged by fire, a fire started by Molotov cocktails.
For my mother, a bomb was thrown into the nursery where her babies slept. That has got to be frightening.
My house was bombed. It was bombed by the black Muslim movement upon the orders of Elijah Muhammad. They had planned to do it from the front and the back so that I couldn't get out.
I was working the graveyard shift in one of the automobile plants in Detroit. He was supposed to be on a schedule to come to Detroit to speak. When I heard early in the morning hours that his house had been firebombed in East Elmhurst, I knew he was not coming. I was wrong. At 9 o'clock, Malcolm was on a plane, came to Detroit, spoke at Ford Auditorium. A friend of mine attended as he could smell the smoke on what he had salvaged from his house after being firebombed.
February 21st, 1965. A crowd lingers outside the Audubon ballrooms. Inside, people fill rows of folding chairs.
There were about 400 persons present in the ballroom here representing an organization known as the Afro-American Unity Organization, headed up by Malcolm X.
The Audubon Ballroom was a huge ballroom, but it had a very small lobby area. I was sitting in the lobby facing the entrance. I guess I'd been there maybe 10, 15 minutes at the most. And I heard Brother Malcolm say, As-salamu alaykum. And next thing I heard was shots.
As-salamu alaykum.
I saw people crawling on the floor. And so I got down too.
Betty Shabazz, Malcolm X's wife.
And my children were crying, you know, what's going on? What's going on? Are they going to shoot us? I knew they had shot my husband.
Men surround Malcolm's body.
I ran forward. I saw Malcolm hold his side and hold his stomach and fell down.
We have two suspects in custody now. One of these men was arrested on the street by one of our patrolmen close by.
Are they members of the Black Muslims?
I would not know that.
Officers wheel away a stretcher.
How do you feel now? I want to kill somebody. That's right, I want to kill somebody. Before the night's over, if Malcolm dies, somebody gonna die.
A photo shows the police carrying Malcolm's body on the stretcher. He lies with his eyes closed and his lips parted. A newspaper headline reads, Malcolm X murdered, gunned down at rally.
He was our manhood. He was the milestone, you know, our anchor.
Malcolm X is the greatest Black man since Marcus Garvey.
And when you lost it, you found out how really lost you were as a people.
Mr. Muhammad, yesterday in a Wire story, a Muslim was quoted as saying that the chickens had come home to roost on Malcolm in reference to Malcolm's earlier statement about the assassination of President Kennedy. Do you feel a Muslim brother would make such a statement about Malcolm upon learning of his death?
Well, I don't know. I know nothing about who it was any more than you.
Has any police force, sir, asked you for a statement?
Mr. Muhammad, Malcolm, before he was killed yesterday, said the Black Muslims were trying to kill him. Would you comment on that?
I know nothing about it. We're not violent people. This is a shock to us.
Elijah's chin shifts. John Ali.
What do you think happened to Malcolm X?
What do I think?
Yes.
John looks down. He shrugs.
What I know, what happened to him? I know he deviated and he died.
On a stage, a man holds up a newspaper. A picture of Elijah sits on the back page.
It's very easy to tell the story of the assassination of Malcolm X as a story of a dissident who leaves a movement and is punished for that. And certainly there was definitely bad blood between Malcolm and the Nation of Islam.
Two police officers stand on a building. Below, people hold up signs that read, Allah is the greatest, and we demand freedom of religion.
But from what we have been able to glean from the released FBI files, and they have not all been released, is that the FBI was gleefully watching this gap, this split grow and grow bitterly between Malcolm and the Nation of Islam.
Photos of Elijah and Malcolm appear.
The hidden hand was the federal government. They would never let a white man shoot Malcolm, because that would have been catastrophe.
Four police officers stand on top of a building.
Now, you always have, excuse my expression, niggas who will sell out their mother for $2.
A crowd stands behind police barricades.
Police are everywhere, on rooftops, standing on fire escapes in plain clothes, and hundreds of New York City policemen in uniform along 147th Street. So far, the last rites for Malcolm X are being performed without incident.
In a packed church, a man leads Betty past an open casket. She wears a black veil.
My sisters and I lost our father. But I think for black people that we lost someone who was brilliant, kind, loving, very compassionate. I think that you have to be in order to have such a profound reaction to injustice.
In the casket, Malcolm's body lies under glass.
James Baldwin wrote of Malcolm X. He was the most gentle and tender man I ever met. That's not the image of Malcolm. But he saw Malcolm relating to black folk.
Outside a building, a group of black people stand on a fire escape.
He honored his own code that he taught us.
Melchizedek's lips part. He raises his hands.
Accept death. Once you accept death, you're free.
A trio of men in suits escort Betty out of the church. Photographers aim their cameras at her.
The day before Malcolm X was to be buried, Elijah Muhammad made his first public appearance since the assassination. The nation's leader was barely visible behind the human wedge of bodyguards.
If you would like to follow either one against me, go ahead and do it. But your end will be pretty bad. I fear for you.
In the audience, Ali applauds enthusiastically.
Also in Chicago, participating in the Muslim convention, is the heavyweight champion Cassius Clay. His adopted Muslim name, Muhammad Ali.
In a photo, Ali sits on a stage behind Elijah. The burial of Malcolm X. Men shovel dirt into a grave.
Malcolm X and anybody else who attacks or talks about attacking Elijah Muhammad will die. No man can oppose the message of Almighty God verbally or physically and get away with it.
Muhammad Ali becomes part of this chorus that anyone who crosses Elijah Muhammad must die. That's a tragedy in all of this. That Malcolm is the enemy? Was Malcolm the enemy when he brought his family to Miami? Did he think that Malcolm was the enemy when he prayed with him before his fight?
In an interview,
Malcolm X got famous mainly being hard on people like you, white people, white devils, you blue-eyed, blonde-headed dog. Whites cared nothing about Malcolm nor so-called Negroes when he was with Elijah Muhammad, but they seemed to love and follow dead leaders. And now they have a dead man who was nothing but and he admit himself, Malcolm, was a tramp, had white women selling the body for him. He was nothing until the honorable Elijah Muhammad made him great. And if Malcolm X had stayed with the man that made him great, taught him everything he knew, today he'd been big, big, big.
A photo appears of Malcolm smiling beside Ali. In a desert, sparse vegetation dots the hills of sand. A bearded man holds out his hands. His lips move. Rows of people bow in unison.
In 72, my father went to Mecca.
A mass of people surround a black building in the shape of a cube, the Kaaba.
And that is what got my father to choose Islam.
Elijah Muhammad, leader of the black Muslims, died of heart failure today in Chicago. He was 77 years old.
1975. Outside, men in FOI uniforms carry a casket between them. Ali walks behind them with a group of black men wearing suits.
We left the nation, I believe, around 75. I was 7 years old.
A photo appears of Ali with a woman and four children. They stand in the doorway to a house. On a road, a leaf drifts over the double lines of a highway.
My brother was so good.
A photo of Ali and Rahman as young children appears.
See, you gotta be me to understand how I feel. I was the only brother, only one brother. Blood brothers. I miss him so much, but I'm going to see him in heaven. Oh, I can't wait to see him. I want to hug and kiss him.
Rahman hunches forward and squeezes his eyes shut. His lips tremble. In an old photo, Rahman stands behind Ali.
Do you remember anything that Muhammad Ali regretted?
Rahman sits on a couch. He shifts.
Let me think a few minutes here.
He leans forward and wipes his eye with a crumpled tissue.
That's a hell of a question.
A trio of photos of Ali's fight with Liston hang framed on a wall. Herb Boyd.
So many years are going to go by, and we're always curious about a generation or two from now. And what perceptions are they going to have? What estimations will they have of Muhammad Ali, of Malcolm X? You know, what were the trajectories of their lives and what did it mean? Already we can see it being played out in different literature, different films, different venues.
Look who gets it next.
At an Olympic ceremony, a woman transfers the flame from her torch to one Ali holds. His hand shakes.
The Ali that has been presented to the public since 1996 is a false image. They've managed to edit out those things that made Muhammad Ali controversial in another era.
Ali lowers his torch to light an object by a fence.
Same people who gave him a standing ovation in Atlanta.
A ball of fire flies up to light the Olympic cauldron.
The same people 20 years earlier had talked about him like a dog.
He was a strident critic of white supremacy.
And I just don't think I should go 10,000 miles from here and shoot some black people that never called me nigger, never lynched me, never put dogs on me, never raped my mama.
And I think a lot of that got written out because of his illness and the fact that he wasn't really able to speak.
In a photo, an older Ali poses in a punching position. Footage of Malcolm plays.
And even today, America is still a country whose governmental system is based upon freedom, justice, and equality for white people alone. There's no such thing as freedom in this country for a black man.
Malcolm, of course, got killed in 65, and so people have been rewriting his narrative ever since.
A street sign reads, Malcolm X Boulevard.
First time I went to the post office to buy Malcolm X stamps, I was conflicted. When Malcolm was killed in 1965, no one would have imagined that he would ever be on any official product of the U.S. government. Seeing Malcolm on a stamp is really symbolic of how his image changed over time.
In a building, light reflects against a patterned stone floor.
To a certain extent, he still lives with us. He hasn't been taken away. The spirit of him lives.
The Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial and Education Center.
You can kill a man, but you can't kill the idea. Every junior high school, every college, every university, all over YouTube, they playing Malcolm's audios and videos just like he's still here. And what he was teaching 50 years ago, you see it happening today.
A large painting of Malcolm decorates a wall.
Black history, American history, and world history changed because of these two guys that had the nerve to be themselves and be bold, and that boldness became contagious. They defined a whole generation of where we walked with our heads held high and our shoulders back.
A photo of Malcolm and Ali at the Hampton Inn.
People forget my father was still this young man in his 20s whose eyes was on the championship. There are things that Malcolm taught him that my father kept with him until his last day.
How did your brother feel about Malcolm X after he was assassinated? Did he ever talk to you about regrets or how he felt?
Never did, but I know my brother. I knew he just felt, he felt bad. I hurt my brother bad, yes.
A photo of Ali holding a Quran in front of his mouth.
Once he severed ties with the Nation of Islam, Muhammad Ali reached out to our family. I think Muhammad Ali likely felt that he owed it to my father to make sure that his wife and his babies were safe and that they were okay.
Atila Shabazz, eldest daughter of Malcolm X.
There was a double take when I came upon him. somewhere between me turning 18, 19, or 20. Now looking right into his face, and you know how he is. You know, he gives you that little dare, like, is that you?
Atala raises her fist. Muhammad Ali Memorial, June 10, 2016.
From the very moment we found one another, it was as if no time had passed at all. We cried out loud. His grief for having not spoken to my dad before he left. Having Muhammad Ali in my life somehow sustained my dad's breath for me just a little while longer. 51 years longer until now.
She looks down. Her hand shakes. Leafless trees line a long road. Footage of Ali's fight with Liston plays.
And I'm upset, Sonny Liston, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest. I am the king of the world.
Leaves drift across the road.
He's my brother and my friend. I express what I know and understand around him, but he has a mind of his own and understanding of his own.
The Welcome to Muhammad Ali training camp sign sticks out of the ground.
It was destiny that they would feel that brotherhood and learn together. But there were these outside forces that prevented them from continuing this beautiful relationship that had started.
Inside a wood-sided building, an iron screen in the shape of a butterfly sits in front of a stone fireplace.
When we were writing my father's autobiography, The Soul of a Butterfly, it was in 2003, I asked him about Malcolm X and how he felt about the relationship and how it ended. And I remember my father sat back in his chair and he closed his eyes. And it took him a little bit to respond, maybe 10 or 15 seconds. And he said to me, he said that turning his back on Malcolm was one of his greatest regrets. He wished that he could go back and tell Malcolm that he was sorry, that he loved him, that he was his friend, and that he was right about so many things.
Muhammad Ali's mosque, Deer Lake, Pennsylvania.
One of the things that I'll never forget was looking up at Muhammad Ali and asking him, did you love my father?
The photo of Ali with Malcolm X's family.
And him saying, I loved your father with all my heart.
A photo of Malcolm X standing beside Ali appears. Audio description provided by International Digital Center. Written by Betty Capot, voiced by Barbara Faison. Copyright 2021. Netflix Worldwide Entertainment, LLC. All rights reserved. Logos, Lightbox. Calabo Inc. Society.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.